Welcome.
Happy Monday, friends.
Welcome back, everyone, to On the Gravel with your hosts, Oliver and Raven.
That's me and Raven.
Yeah.
If you've never seen us before.
If this is your first time, but hopefully we got some returning viewers. Viewers, listeners, however you're absorbing this content throughout the Aletheia world. But yeah, I'm just going to start it off by saying make sure you subscribe, like, follow through on YouTube, both on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It helps us a lot. So just do that. It takes 3 seconds. So
also happy Easter.
Also, I mean, happy Easter.
Yeah. We're recording this on Easter. So to those of you that celebrate it, happy Easter. And to those of you that don't, happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday. Happy non-race
Happy Monday
weekend.
When it comes out. But
no race this week, but that's okay because there was plenty of interesting news. First off,
and other discretions that went racing this week.
The point that Oliver and I argued about, he texted me, like, what am I talking about on the dock, was Peter Windsor, a former F1 driver and current Formula One analyst, believes that Perez has re-signed with Red Bull for another year. The quote itself says that he would like to see signs alongside Verstappen at Red Bull, but he has explained that he's also hearing several rumors that Sergio Perez's contract has already been extended. Let's beef.
I don't think that's happening. I really don't. I think they're going to hold off with Sergio for as long as possible. I find that Sergio is probably going to be like a last-ditch effort to put somebody in the seat. Like, I think Sergio's probably the backup plan. For 2025, I don't think they're going to keep him. I really don't.
I mean, you have...
And maybe those are the rumors he's hearing. Like, maybe he's hearing stuff about, you know, Sergio could have a contract for next season. I think that's possible. He could, but I don't think he's, you know, option number one at Red Bull for this coming season.
I agree 100%. I mean, you got Liam Lawson, who is promised a seat some point this year or next year. Oliver's back.
Earthquake.
And... Overall, it just kind of doesn't make sense. He hasn't been proving himself. There's been the rumor that Alonso may be going to Red Bull.
Which is super exciting.
I mean...
You have Yuki in the RB.
And you have Yuki in the... Like, there's so much that could happen with that second spot. And especially with the implosion of Red Bull the last 2 months, we don't even know if Verstappen's going to be there for the rest of his contract. So, in reality, there might be a total switch-up.
I think that's possible.
And you kind of have to keep that open-minded going into the next few years if you're Red Bull, just because if that is the case, do you keep Perez to be kind of like a mentor to one of these young guys? Yeah. I mean, I see that there's better mentors in the world.
Yeah.
Fernando being one of them, but...
Oh, Fernando would be a phenomenal mentor in any team.
So it really could come down to anything. And I think Liam Lawson is the one sitting most anxiously awaiting to hear anything that happens, just because...
I mean, he's the one who doesn't have a seat, period, right now.
And it gets him the car.
Yeah, I was going to say, all of this, it's kind of his entry into the sport, whatever's happening with Red Bull. So he's definitely the one who is most interested to hear what's going on with all this stuff. But... Yeah, I don't think Sergio's re-signed yet. I don't think that rumor is true whatsoever. I mean, like, even if you think about, you know, Red Bull wants top performance, XYZ. Let's talk about, like, Verstappen's engine blowout at Australia last week, and then Perez could not get past a single Ferrari or McLaren all race. Like, he was nowhere. Why would you want to re-sign him into the best car when he can't even finish in the top five?
Very valid points, Oliver.
I think it's a fair statement, you know?
Verstappen's chief mechanic, Lee Stevenson, is set to depart Red Bull after 18 years with the team. He worked alongside Max for all 56 wins and 350 and three world championships.
350 world championships.
I mean, it feels like Max is going to get to 350 world championships.
No, he'll leave. He'll leave first. He'll go somewhere else.
But this is huge. I mean... Who do you get now? Do you get Bono? Do you try to go after him to get Max as a new engineer, or do you keep someone in the team? Maybe Max already has someone in mind.
Because you keep somebody in the team.
I mean,
but your point that you threw down with his green and black heart.
Yeah. Well, so this was the thing, was like on the actual goodbye post that Lee Stevenson posted on Instagram, the final thing was like, you know, final day here, next chapter of my life starts Monday, followed with a green and a black heart. So that means it has to go to stake, right?
Yeah. Or I don't know, he could go to some other discretion. I don't know.
That's true. That's very true. But him going to stake is like, I don't understand that move. Like,
well, maybe
unless you're trying to do it for Audi and
yeah.
then trying to like just secure a very, very talented engineer for one of the two drivers that you get for that.
That's what I feel like it probably leans towards, if that's what that green and black heart leans to.
It just doesn't make sense.
Or it's a massive coincidence.
I just chose those two colors because I like them.
They're my two favorites.
You can take the next point.
Yeah, so I saw this on Instagram like maybe 2-3 days ago, that Toto Wolff's going to be missing the Japanese GP due to personal scheduling conflict. What that personal scheduling conflict is, I have absolutely no idea. But he also told Lewis that he will have to take a picture of the back of the rear wing once he moves to Ferrari, saying that Mercedes will come back. I thought that was hilarious because I've been seeing stuff about this all week. Toto is on something when he's saying that.
Well, he is on his medication, so can't do that. I mean,
okay.
Something that I learned recently that was funny was that Toto Wolff, when he was a racer, he had a very, very bad crash, I believe on the Nürburgring. It was like 27 G's that he pulled during the crash.
But I never heard of this.
The funniest thing about it was he was sponsored by Red Bull during his racing career.
Wonderful.
Which, that just made me step back and be like, man.
It all comes full circle.
It all comes full circle. It really does.
But no, for Toto to say like something so bold as to Lewis looking at the rear wing of a Mercedes for the rest of his career, I just think that's very funny with where Mercedes is right now. You know, you have both of their drivers struggling to score points and even get into Q3 on some race weeks. Or finish the race. And you have, you know, Ferrari fighting for podiums every single race.
Which we'll dig into that point mm-hmm. real quick with, you know, if the team ever gets 1 and 2 at Australia.
They've gone on to win both the drivers and constructors world championships.
So, it could happen. I'm not saying it is, but it could. Anything's possible.
I was going to say, if you like trends, if you like stuff like that, and you're a Ferrari fan, that is the copium you need to be on for the rest of the season.
McLaren CEO Zak Brown signed a contract extension that makes him the CEO until 2030. Congrats to him, and maybe he will rejoin Wheel of Fortune for a celebrity game.
That would be so cool. If you've never seen it, yeah, look it up. Just look up cool. Zak Brown. I think it was actually The Price is Right.
No, it was the Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, maybe it was.
And I mean, he only won like $3,000, but
he said he was putting it towards his racing career, though.
I was going to say, like, he was like a 15-year-old kid, so that money going towards your racing career makes a lot of sense. And hey,
yeah, look that video up on YouTube. It's super funny.
If he didn't win that, there's no saying that he is where he is today.
Yeah, he's only in the world of F1 because he was on Wheel of Fortune when he was 14.
That's the only reason.
That's the butterfly effect, baby.
I'm not going to say that. He has plenty of talent, but he said it himself that he was not a good racer. So Honda seems to be making efforts to return to the sport, which is absolutely shocking.
They're always in, out.
Make up your mind, brother. They're going to be opening a new F1 base in the UK that will allow them to do post-race maintenance for all the power supplies and power units that they will be supplying Aston Martin starting in 2026.
That's a beautiful thing.
Mike Crack.
Well, also, now that I'm thinking about this, I know...
We'll get into
you know,
the next point later.
Red Bull was using Honda power engines up until 2021, and then 2022 they became Red Bull powertrains, mm-hmm. but they were still using Honda's factories. I feel like this is now like very much
similar situation.
Not similar situation, but reinforcing the point that Red Bull by 2026 will be like fully on their own when it comes to making engines. Because I know they've still had Honda influence, in their transition. Well, like, to that's Red Bull a whole thing trains.
About why Yuki is still, like, some people argue that Yuki shouldn't have a spot after his troubles last year. I think that kind of goes out the window with how he's performed so far this year.
Yeah, he's decimating his teammate, and we'll get into that.
But it's like a huge thing why Yuki has that seat is because he was the Honda driver, and Honda was like, okay, we want him to have the seat if we're going to be continue supplying you.
Exactly.
And, you know, like, there could be a similar situation that happens with Aston Martin. Like,
bringing a Japanese driver.
Or just a Honda-sponsored driver. And, yeah. I mean, there's already been talks of, like, Lance Stroll booting his child for a better driver. Like,
oh yeah, Lawrence taking Lance out. Yeah. He's got to do that at some point. I feel like he will. He'll get to a breaking point where
he'll either get to a breaking point where that happens, or Adrian Newey joins the team, Fernando wins the championship, and they win the constructors trophy, and then Lance is like, "Ha, I won a constructors trophy. My teammate won. I'm good." And then they can move in whoever, and then it's Alonso's rookie year again. So
it's been this guy's rookie year for 25 years, man.
I love him. He makes me so happy.
Speaking of Alonso, actually, Aston Martin team principal Mike Crack has backed his driver, stating that Alonso would never put anybody in harm's way in relation to that incident last week at the Australian GP.
Especially his
GP.
Best friend. Yeah. He spent the last two New Years with.
George Russell, shirtless Instagram photo.
Why would he get rid of his best friend?
But yeah, they decided not to appeal the penalty, that crazy 20-second post-race penalty. And that's because in the 96-hour window, they didn't get any new, big information that they could use to appeal it.
The main thing that
no new info is going to come out. Like, it was cut and dry.
I was going to say, it's all schematics and, like, the graphs of everything. And the data did point to Alonso breaking early. He said that.
Oh, he did.
He knew, like, we all know that actually happened. But the thing about it that kind of, I don't want to say, like, discredits George's, like, claim, but he was on worse tires, he was on a worse line, and he's had a history of kind of getting comfortable in a position and then realizing he's in the wrong and then making a really bad mistake. Go back to Tuscany? No, that doesn't sound right.
With George?
Yeah, when it was safety car and he guns it a little bit to catch
Imola.
Up to the... Yeah,
Imola okay. 2020, he drops under the safety car. You had the other incident, Imola 2021, with Valtteri, where George went off onto the wet line and then just steered straight into Valtteri because he caught some water on the tires. His mental and his decision-making process when he's in those situations...
Well, he's also, I don't want to call him a snitch, but, like...
Oh, nobody complains.
Lando jumped the gun.
Like, nobody complains more than George Russell.
I saw a whole thing where it's like he's like the James Bond, just, like, spying on everyone and just, like, oh, someone did this. Oh, someone did this. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's racing. Continue. Like,
you can't fault Fernando Alonso for that situation. Like, it's always the, what's the word? I can't think of the word. It's on George Russell, the person who's overtaking, to make a clean overtake. Like, it's on George to react to what Fernando does when he wants to make an overtake on him. So that's where I'm kind of confused in the fact that they gave Alonso this penalty. Like, I hate to keep talking about it like we did last week, but it's genuinely so aggravating when it is on the overtaking driver to make said overtake. You need to react to what the driver ahead of you is doing. They have the track position. They have the precedent, all of that kind of stuff when it comes to defending the position.
It's just a rough situation. And it makes sense that, you know, what the evidence that they have on Alonso for the penalty was the evidence that they were looking at. They weren't looking at George's. They weren't looking at anyone else's.
It was just Fernando breaking early. Like, I feel like that's all it was.
I was just saying they saw that and essentially was like, that's the smoking gun, I feel like. And they had to make that decision. We know that Ferrari really wants to get Adrian Newey, but apparently another team wants to too.
I'm not surprised that another team wants to, but this is an interesting one.
Yeah, Aston Martin placed a comparable bid to some actual driver's salary to get the renowned car designer. So,
and it was said that this was like the level of the top driver. So you're talking like $50-60 million a year, like a Max Verstappen or Lewis Hamilton type salary.
A lot of money. And, you know, it seems like Daddy Stroll is quite literally saying, make my team a champion and Alonso a world champion again.
Which, don't get us wrong, I'm so there for that. But
complaining.
That is incredible. Like, now Lawrence Stroll's really using his money for good.
Mm-hmm. But I'm going to counterpoint with, does it make sense for him to go to Aston Martin over Ferrari? Because, I mean, you got Red Bull right now as first, you got Ferrari as second, McLaren as third, and then you can argue Mercedes or Aston Martin for fourth or fifth.
Yeah, they're kind of interchangeable.
So do you join the second best car, or do you try to join the fourth or fifth best car?
I wouldn't want to tarnish Adrian Newey's legacy. Like, I'd want him to join like a top team.
Yeah, but like...
And I wouldn't consider Mercedes or Aston Martin a top team.
Aston Martin has already gotten a lot of Red Bull technicians and engineers over the last few years, especially last year. I believe they got like 12 total or something.
Mm-hmm.
So do you do that to get a crew that's already used to working with him?
Which
is
fair.
As a thing where it's like, hey, instead of going to Ferrari and, you know, meeting with some of your old like teammates, but also a bunch of new guys, or do you go to somewhere that's been kind of collecting your former teammates expecting you?
This was all a large ploy to lure Adrian Newey to the team.
Yeah.
How much does Adrian Newey value money?
I don't think that question. Much.
Yeah, I think he values his legacy as an engineer, way more.
I think he cares more about the championships and just being classified as the greatest car engineer ever. Because, I mean, so far, he is. Not going to lie.
But hey, if it ends up going through, that's a very smart plan from Lawrence Stroll to keep Alonso at Aston Martin. Because Alonso is definitely looking around the paddock.
Especially with McLaren. Or not McLaren, Mercedes open seat.
And that potential Red Bull open seat.
Yeah, the potential Red Bull open seat really throws things around. So sticking with some rumorish information, right after we uploaded last week's episode, the rumor of Danny Ricciardo being given an ultimatum was ultimately false. But I have to believe to some aspect of this is actually true because...
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously have to think that he's feeling the pressure of his lack of performance. And, you know, this was kind of the period for him to get back on his feet and really need to perform to get back into that Red Bull seat when it was opened.
Yeah.
That does not seem to be happening.
It's seeming now. Yeah, every single week it's getting worse and worse for Daniel. He's making a lot of mistakes. He's off the pace of Yuki.
He also, last 2 weeks, was complaining to some degree, not like blaming the entire portion of it, but some of the car's parts he was saying were like not the same or not performing as well as they should be, which they did check and they said yes. To some degree, that is correct, but to another degree, I think it's driver's error.
Yeah.
Now, this also falls into the point that Helmut Marko says that Yuki needs to improve more before he's considered for the Red Bull seat. Now, in this situation with V-Carb, you have both drivers trying to prove themselves to get to the Red Bull seat.
Mm-hmm.
If Yuki surpasses Daniel... It's not that much because Daniel's not put the bar very high.
So I agree.
You need to be outperforming him, scoring points, and really proving yourself.
Which, to some degree, he is doing this year so far.
Yes. At the same time, if you're Daniel, surpassing Yuki doesn't really keep your seat open or locked.
Doesn't really secure your seat either.
Yeah, it's somewhat of a lose-lose for both of them, and... Personally, with Helmut Marko saying to Yuki that he needs to improve more, doesn't make much sense because he's essentially saying, I want you to do better in a worse car when you're already doing better way better than your teammate.
Now, does this see what this actually makes me think of is the 2021 Nikita Mazepin and Mick Schumacher conversation, where I really hate comparing him to this to him. But Daniel is essentially Nikita Mazepin in this situation. If you're really going crazy with this, Mick Schumacher being Yuki Tsunoda, where it's like you are so clear of your teammate that whatever you do isn't going to look that impressive because your teammate is so far behind you. Like, this was the argument that people used when Mick and Nikita were driving together. It's like, sure, Mick Schumacher's beating Nikita Mazepin every single week, but it's Nikita Mazepin.
Yeah.
Like, sure, Yuki's beating Daniel every week, but it's washed Daniel Ricciardo. Like, so, I don't know.
That, it's just a weird power dynamic, and
I love you, by the way, Daniel. Don't take this the wrong way.
He's the only person to drive for all four Red Bull teams. Fun fact. But wow. Yeah, I mean, I feel like, do you put Yuki in the Red Bull to just see how he does on some practices? And if it's like, okay, you know, just based off these two practices, we think you're doing better than
it's the same thing they do with Daniel at Silverstone last year, where they had him do his test laps and he was like a tenth or two off Max Verstappen.
Yeah. So I want to see Yuki in that car and see if he's doing better than Checo, because if so, that should be a given to do so. But I like what you said here. You either stick with Yuki in the Red Bull or outsource to Carlos Sainz.
Those are really the only two options. And maybe a sneaky little Fernando Alonso in there as well.
If the stars align properly for him. But I don't think that's actually going to happen.
I don't either.
Marco obviously displeased with how Ricciardo is driving. And now he's going to be getting even less time in the car with Red Bull junior driver
Ayumu Iwase getting first practice in Japan, which is going to be very interesting. Ayumu Iwase was fighting for the title last year, kind of, with Teo Porcher and Frederick Vesti, but kind of fell off towards the end of the season. Vesti and Porcher were just way more consistent, but Ayumu is definitely a huge talent. He's not racing in F2 anymore this year. I can't actually remember where he went to for this kind of off year, I guess, but he might actually be in Super Formula now that I'm thinking about it. But he has definitely been a hot prospect. He's probably the best one in the Red Bull junior ranks when it comes to open wheelers. So to see how he does in Japan, in the place of Daniel Ricciardo going up against Yuki Tsunoda will be very, very cool.
Yeah. I mean, if Liam doesn't get a seat, he could possibly get a seat.
No, Liam will get a seat before Ayumu does.
But like, if the stars align, you get rid of Daniel, you get rid of Checo, you give Liam the Red Bull.
Or you give Yuki the Red Bull and you give Liam and Ayumu the RB seats.
That would, just as like a test period, and then you can rearrange afterwards.
Maybe like do that for a season. Do that next year. Do that next year.
Just do it half a season.
And then, well, I don't know. I feel like that's still not normal, I guess.
Yeah. Lando Norris now holds the record for the most podium finishes without winning a race at 14, beating Nick Heidfeld.
Nick Heidfeld's record. Nick Heidfeld raced in F1 in the late 2000s, early 2010s. He was always a super consistent driver for Lotus and BMW Sauber at the time. And he was like a very notable, decent midfield driver who was always able to score that, you know, crazy podium. Not crazy podium, but just, you know, when he was given the chance, he would take those podiums. And now Lando Norris passing that, he has the most podiums without a race win. He has the most points without a race win. Like, he's setting a lot of unwanted Charles Leclerc-esque records when it comes to, you know, pole positions.
Lando's point, too, I mean, that kind of just shows that you are a good, consistent driver. You're not going to maybe win every race, but you're consistently getting, you know, P2, P3, maybe
I was talking to Raven off air about this a couple days ago, where it's like when the reliability of the cars improves so much over time. Like when you think about, you know, 70s, 80s Formula One, in like, let's say a 15 race season, the average driver is DNFing like 6 or 7 times a race. And that extends to the top teams in the championship. So when you think about that, precedent from early F1, and then you take it into modern F1, where reliability is so much more sound. It's you're never going to see a season where the average DNFs per driver is anything above like 2. So you know that means like the top drivers are not DNFing as much as they used to in the past. So the unlikely shift up for all the rest of the drivers when those DNFs happen is so much more few and far in between that, you know, it's way easier to set a record like this because there's one podium spot you're fighting for outside of Red Bull. So if you're consistently the best non-Red Bull driver, you're going to be scoring P3 after P3 after P3, and you're not going to get those unlikely race wins because the reliability of the cars ahead of you is so good. Like, that's why I think this record is so much easier to set now. It's just because of how good reliability's gotten.
That's a really good point. I have not thought about it like that. So, Gunther Steiner has been making the best of life outside of the paddock and was the post-race interviewer last week.
Which was so fun to watch.
That was great. I think that was just the surprise highlight of the weekend. But he was also named the ambassador for the Miami Grand Prix later in like 2 months.
What does that actually mean? Like, what? Like,
I don't really know, but like,
is that kind of just one of those random titles we're giving now?
Yeah, is that just like the Danny Rick third Red Bull?
Third driver.
For the personality hire.
Yeah. I'm okay with Gunther being a personality hire in the paddock. I can't lie. I don't want him gone.
I mean, he's a guy that you want to keep around just because he's entertaining and likable.
Yeah.
And obviously, you got to keep the people, the fans, like around because it helps. It just helps with watchability. And
I'm gonna
there's
say,
funny moments with it. Like Charles Leclerc not being able to understand him after the interview.
Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
Charles, the car looked very good, Charles.
Yeah. There's been some news about Mercedes sponsors Puma and Tommy Hilfiger. Over the last few days, it was reported that Adidas was supposed to be replacing both of them as race suit and shoe supplier sponsors, but that seems to have some truths and some farces.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Hilfiger told Women's Wear Daily, a weird article to be talking about F1, but hey, I'm not going to judge, that they are excited to be at the forefront in continuing partnership with Mercedes and that they are excited to accelerate the legacy into the 24-25 season. So it seems like they will still be the ones designing the suits and having some sort of sponsorship rights.
I was going to say, besides like Patronus and AMG, Tommy Hilfiger is like the most notable Mercedes sponsor.
It's a long time sponsor from like, what I've gathered.
Try and find back-to-back interviews where Lewis Hamilton is not wearing some piece of Tommy Hilfiger. You'll never find it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Nothing has been said by Puma reps to these rumors, which makes many people, including myself, believe that they are going to be replaced by Adidas, who actually just lost a huge sponsor with the German national soccer team. So it makes sense that they're going to be throwing money around trying to get another major sponsor.
I'm an Adidas fan myself. I would be super happy to see some Adidas team wear coming to F1.
Yeah, I think it's cool, but, you know, I mean, sucks for Puma. I think they're also longtime Mercedes sponsors, and it's going to be interesting with some Adidas. You think someone's going to drive with some skate shoes on?
No. Yep, I'm getting in the car with the Heelys on. But I feel like you don't really see like a lot of big name what's it called? Clothing sponsors in F1. Like, it's not, you never seen like Nike, Adidas. Like,
you have like Kappa. I was going to say you have Kappa,
Astor,
which is, but those are bigger.
Alpine Stars. I mean, that's race suits.
I have my Castor jacket.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it is just because those are bigger European brands.
True.
You know, Puma's huge outside of the US. Adidas is obviously really big. Nike's kind of got the chokehold over the American market. But it makes sense that you don't see Nike in F1 as much as, you know, all these German brands and all these other European brands that just have a history and have more legacy with the teams that they're sponsoring. Valtteri Bottas reveals that he has an addiction outside of F1.
It's not coffee.
It's not drugs. although his legs would kind of suggest that he is on drugs.
But the guy's got some tiny legs.
It's actually competitive cycling, which is racing, but less advanced and more awkward. But this whole article that he was saying about this point actually is a really, really good point just for the young drivers that have a lot of pressure on themselves. He said in the article that his days at Mercedes, he was very, very strict, wouldn't do much stuff outside of racing just to keep himself disciplined. And he kind of realized in the last few years that you don't have to do that per se. You can kind of
disconnect.
Yeah, and do stuff outside of the sport overall. And I feel like this kind of helps a lot of the drivers. You know, Lewis is into fashion. Charles makes music. He's also now a ice cream
about
shop
about to open
owner
an ice cream shop
in Milan, but that'll be our next point. And George is also another fashion guy. These guys have their kind
passions. I mean, you've Lando Norris, who's a streamer.
Yeah, like, and then you have Max Verstappen, who just can't stop driving in everywhere.
Max goes from racing in the car to racing in the iRacing World Endurance Championship.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. But, you know, Oliver's favorite driver, Scuderia Ferrari Depression, is opening a ice cream shop in Milan, which, good for him, you know? I think that's a cool little thing.
Charles outside of like F1 is so interesting, though. Like, he's a pianist. Now he's opening an ice cream shop. Like, he feels like some like 1600s Italian painter or something. Like, that's the aura he gives off outside of racing.
He's a very creative person, and I think he does like to have the connection with people.
Yeah.
You know, he's from Monaco. I believe Monaco is one of those countries that... Is it a country, actually?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's a city-state.
It's a city-state, but it's classified
it is recognized as a country,
okay.
Yes.
That's what I thought. I feel like Monaco just has a very tight-knit community.
Oh, yeah.
So him wanting to be a part of that community in Italy, you know, good on him.
I think
it's cool. It's not too
extend into his community in Monaco.
Yeah.
Have a name in Italy where Ferrari is based at, like getting himself
cool
out there
and it's
connecting.
If it works out, he could branch out across the world and
maybe we go to his ice cream shop this summer.
Yay. Ice cream.
Getting soft served by Charles Leclerc
that's actually a dream.
I'm gonna fight every urge to not turn gay while I'm there.
A little fun fact. At the end of the day, all these drivers are just like us, except for they have millions of dollars and their super licenses. That was not the fun fact, but that's just the point I had to make out. Today's fun fact is that today in sports history, March 31st, Michael and Ralph Schumacher became the first siblings to share the front row of a grid ever in an F1 race in 2001.
The Brazilian GP, you had Michael Schumacher in the Ferrari and you had Ralph Schumacher in the Williams.
That's a pretty cool feeling. So that kind of...
Dude, that reminds me of that Wayne Gretzky point statistic where he's like...
Because one of the rookies, it was like Bedard or something where it's like if he scores...
Because it's like Wayne Gretzky, like his brother. Because I remember he played professional ice hockey and it's like Wayne Gretzky has like X amount of goals. Him and his brother combined have X amount of goals. His brother has one of them. Where it's like Michael Schumacher and Ralph Schumacher have 98 wins between them. Michael has 91 of them.
Yeah, I've seen that before. That's really good. That kind of wraps it up for our F1 segment of today. You know, there wasn't a race, so... Not too much that we can really go over. But
I was gonna say, there's not much in any other description of racing except for the World Rally Championship.
Which I have been waiting for 2 months. And it's finally here, and it was fantastic, you know. Kenya was a 4-day long 19-stage course with some of the best drivers in the world.
Yeah, you guys were watching March Madness. We were watching Kenya World Rally, baby.
Absolutely. Starting with the winners and the main point scorers for the rally, you have Rovin Pera scoring first place with 20 points in his 12th World Rally Car win. It's been a while, but he finally wins it again. Got his teammate Katsuta coming in close second, only a minute and a half behind all stages, which is incredible if you're only a minute and a half behind in
over 19 different stages,
which are from anywhere, I believe, like 18 kilometers to over 50 kilometers.
Yeah, for those of you that have never followed rally before, so it's you have to understand, like, because when I was looking at it for the very first time, you know, like seeing the final day in Sweden per se, let's say, you know, P2 is 5 minutes behind P1. I'm like, what is going on?
Where does that time come from?
And Raven explained it really well, where it's all 19 stages combined, he's 5 minutes behind. So like a minute and a half behind over 19 stages in Kenya, that's only like 4 or 5 seconds per heat. And on an 18 kilometer course, only being an average of 4 or 5 seconds behind is actually incredible. Yeah. Like, that's so close.
And Oliver asked, I've had a lot of people ask me, Sully, one of our Aletheo boys, asked what the other driver is doing in the car, because there's two people in the car with Rally, which is very, very strange to most people. But with the stages being so long and so complex, and there being, you know, anywhere from 16 to plus, it's hard to remember the entire course like an F1 track, where instead of it being a few miles, now it's hundreds of miles. So,
I was going to say, like, you're talking like these heats can be like double or triple the length of the Nordschleife in Germany.
Absolutely. And that's hard to remember. You can't have a GPS, so you have your co-driver who's sitting right next to you with a notebook.
Yeah, like a pen and paper.
And he is just screaming things over the radio, essentially. The turn systems are rated 1 to 6, with 1 and 2 being the sharpest, 5 and 6 being whatever the opposite of sharp. The smoothest, I would say.
There we go.
It's one of those things where they're just there to like maintain speed, give you information on how to approach these corners and what's the next few events coming. Say there's a sharp left and then there's a jump afterwards. You got to know that there's a jump afterwards. Otherwise, you could be throwing the car sideways in air. So it's a lot of just small, small details. And during the second day, driver and their co-driver's radio got messed up. And they had to resort to hand signals. Hand signal, like
over 20 kilometers.
4 left, 4 right. Like, that is so difficult to do while you are driving, you know, 120 kilometers on dirt and gravel with giant rocks in the way.
You had the one where the window was left open and you were just getting gravel coming into the car and he couldn't see.
Some of them had to wear goggles because the windows were broken, and it's very chaotic. But continuing with the winners and the main point scorers, you have the Frenchman Formar in the Ford coming in third. This is the first time Ford has got a podium finish in Kenya since 2002.
So incredible for the Ford family.
Absolutely great for them. You have Elfyn Evans securing fourth with 16 points, and Thierry Neuville, the championship leader, only scoring 8 points on Saturday. But he continued that performance on Sunday with an extra 6 points, and with the Wolf Power stage, another 5 points on that, which I will explain here in a second for those
who are confused. The point system and rally is really confusing.
So going up to the overall standings, you have Thierry Neuville in first place with 67, Evans following in second with 6 points behind at 61, Formon in third with 46, Ott Tanak in fourth with 33, Kenya winner Rovanperän in fifth with 31, and his teammate Katsuta in sixth with 1 point behind him at 30. World Rally 2 was also a very close one. You had Swedish rally winner Oliver Solberg coming in second behind first-time racer in rally Brit Gus Greensmith, who drove literally with everything he had.
Yeah, he missed like the first...
He raced those first two days. He was just sicker than a dog. After the second day, the interviewer was like, he just was like, I need a bed. I can't talk. Like, I'm so exhausted. I tried to stand in front of the car for a little bit and I just had to come sit down. So absolutely impressive that he got that done. He finished a minute and a half ahead of Oliver. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. But the scoring of Rally is very fascinating and very confusing. So I'm going to go over that real quick just to explain it a little bit. But essentially, you have the top 10 drivers racing Friday and Saturday. After Saturday, that classification of where they finish gets recorded, and then they are awarded anywhere from 18 to 1 points. It goes 18, 15, 13, 10, 8, 6, 4, 3, 2, 1.
From first to 10th.
Yes. If a team does not finish on Sunday and they were awarded somewhere in those points, the next team, it just like removes them, and then everyone moves up a spot. So that's how the main points scored. Then on Sundays, there's the actual another 7-point battle. So it's 7-1 for first and seventh.
Yeah.
That is just on how people do on the last day. On overall end, there's a small power stage. I believe it's usually the last stage of the event where everything else kind of doesn't matter as much. It still goes to your total time and everything, but the points are then awarded to the top five fastest drivers with a slip scale going down to one.
From first to fifth. It's so much.
So,
but
the perfect rally weekend is you get first place, you have the fastest on Sunday, and then you're the fastest in the Wolf Power stage, which would get you 30 points overall, which is what Newville did on Monaco and the first rally event.
Yeah, it's a lot. So it seems as though the stages become more and more important as the weekend goes on. So obviously, I mean, literally in the last stage, there's a whole point system dedicated just to that one stage.
But that's where you kind of get like how Thierry Neuville is still in first place in the standings, even though he finished what?
P5 in Kenya.
So he only gets 8 points for that. But then he was the second fastest on Sunday, so he gets an extra 6 points.
And then he won the power stage.
And then won the power stage, so that's an extra 5 points. So that, it really shows that you don't have to win to get
score
all the points.
A huge chunk of points.
To get all the points. You have his teammate, or you have both Toyota Gazoo drivers in fifth and sixth in the championship. They came first and second this week.
Yep.
And I mean, you had still 30 points behind. So
yeah, you had Rovan Perra not scoring a single point on Sunday, even though he won Saturday. He didn't score a single point on Sunday, and he was only P4 in the power stage.
He had a lot of punctures and like suspension issue one day.
Yeah.
Go check out those highlights. They're absolute chaos. It was amazing. Punctures, retirements, big rocks and bushes, and lots of dirt.
Yeah, we had back-to-back banger events, like all the snow and stuff in Sweden, going to the safari of Kenya. Like, it was so cool.
Absolutely amazing. But
now we have a huge European tour.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Croatia, Portugal, Italy, Poland, Latvia, Finland, Greece. And then we fly over to Chile and South America. Then we go to Germany for the European rally, and then we finish up in Japan.
Absolutely. It's going to be a fun one. That's kind of it for today. I know WEC's next event is Imola on April 21st at 6 a.m. for us American Central watchers. So
that should be a six-hour race, I believe.
Yes. MotoGP, I don't believe, races until next week. Double-check that for me.
I will.
Obviously, you have Japan 2 weeks from today, so that will be very, very exciting. That's going to be a good race. Little point that we did forget, it was announced this week that
Grand Prix of the Americas, Sunday, April 14th.
Okay, so it is also... Oh, they race at COTA.
Yeah.
The same day as F1 races Japan. Okay, that's very exciting. But
No, it's the week after. We race in Japan next week.
Oh, yeah. Okay. My timeline.
So this is during another F1 off weekend.
Okay. That works. Yes. Like we were saying, the order of the first few races is going to change next year. Australia is going to be the opening race. And I believe Jeddah and Qatar are going to be.
Jeddah and Bahrain are getting pushed further back so that Ramadan doesn't influence it. But
which will mean more races on Sundays?
Yeah, less races on Saturdays, which I'm actually kind of disappointed about. I've liked this Saturday night start to the season that we've had. I actually think it's been really cool.
Australia will still be on
Australia
Sunday
will
night
still be
for
super
us.
Late. I mean, Japan is going to be at night for us. The next race in China will be at night. But I mean, for those of you that have been watching F1 for a while, we're finally going back to Australia being the opening race of the season, which has not happened since 2019. Wow. So it's been a hot minute. But yeah, I'm cool to go back to Australia at the beginning. The past few years, the Aussie GP has been phenomenal. So
absolutely. So I think it would be a fun one. Plus, it's going to be like a weird shakeup. Because I don't feel like if you win Australia, I don't feel like you're going to be leading.
Yeah, it's been like an off circuit. I mean, like,
it's like, well, obviously you had Red Bull struggles this year. And even though Max won last year, there was a lot of chances where other people could have won.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like you could have a situation where the first team that wins at Australia doesn't lead the construction or drivers by the third race of the year.
2022. Charles Leclerc records his first ever Grand Slam in the Australia GP and then gets decimated in the championship by Verstappen. That's just my life.
Just how it is. But that wraps up for us. We'll be back next week. Go check out the Good Morning Hockey Show that comes out every day during the weekday. We got some awesome guests this week. Go check out last week's episodes because we had some amazing guests. But yeah, we'll be trying to get some people to talk, hopefully for next episode, and then obviously Japan in 2 weeks. So
Japan in 7 days.
God, I'm. It's next week.
Yeah.
All right.
It's okay. It's Easter. There's a lot going on.
School starts tomorrow for me, so I'm not looking forward to that. But it is my last quarter, so I'm almost done. But that'll be it for us here at the Alethio headquarters in Chicago. Signing out. We'll see you next time.
Au revoir, my friends. In French, that means see you soon.